This is a replay of the Tuesday night, April 9th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings in Unless Sports Preempt Us. That's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from One VoIP. For the world's best customer service, it's One VoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have the 3 hours to spend together. As I was saying, if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. And of course, we'll have some post-eclipse talk. I know that's not why Johnny D's calling right now, but I believe he traveled to see it yesterday. So we'll definitely check that out. You know, a lot of people online were predicting all these things that were going to happen. Yeah, the earth will fall, don't you know it? And so I was looking around. Well, what did happen? Well, one woman went crazy. It's a Georgia woman who was on I-10 in Florida, claiming God spoke to her during the solar eclipse, so she shot two people on I-10. Kid you not. And apparently they located her and her purple Dodge Challenger, that statutory grape, I'm sure, with Georgia plates on I-10. After conducting a felony traffic stop, they found her, 22 years old, by the way, with an AR-15 and a 9mm handgun in the vehicle. And it is unclear which firearm she used to shoot the highway travelers, or other than the word of God, why she did it, or how she chose those two. But apparently, when she checked out of a local hotel earlier in the day, she told staff that she'd be going on a shooting spree directed by God in relation to the solar eclipse. You know, if you're the desk clerk who's checking her out, you really gotta wonder. You say to yourself, should I be calling authorities? You know, because part of me says no one would believe that, and no one did call authorities, apparently. So she started the spree within 5 miles of entering the interstate, striking a passing car with gunfire multiple times. Glass fragments from the window fell on the driver. A bullet grazed his arm, but he was able to drive to the shoulder and get away. So that was a miss. Then she continued to drive westbound on I-10. As I say, she's a Georgia woman. She's on I-10, which goes nowhere in Georgia. It's Florida, and then it goes right into Alabama, but not Georgia. As far as I know, I'd have to look at a map and if I'm wrong, but I don't think so. I think it misses Georgia entirely. And then, regardless, she continued, as I say, westbound, and this time, passing vehicle, she hit the driver in the neck. The victim's alive, currently receiving treatment at a local hospital, and no word about the condition. The woman who got the word of knowledge from God, that, by the way, Talon Nichelle Celestine is her name, is in the Holmes County Jail. Attempted murder, aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, and improper discharge of a firearm. Thank God she wasn't a good shot. All right, so I realize, and we're talking about this somewhat tongue-in-cheek, about solar eclipses seen as signs from God, but as far as I know, nobody was saying the signs mean pick off drivers on the interstates. So you got a lot of Bible interpretations, sign that the end is near, judgment is imminent, but absolutely nothing that would tell you to shoot passing motorists. Not that there were any at the time that the Bible was written, but even so. The passage, by the way, that people point to over the last few days, Joel 2:31, The sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the great and terrible day of the Lord come. Eclipses are fairly routine. There won't be another solar eclipse that we see dead center in the U.S. for about 18 to 20 years. But nonetheless, there'd be a lot of times for end times based upon solar eclipses. So I'm not sure that any of us can determine which one. So that was the weirdest thing I heard about the eclipse. Other than that, I heard absolutely nothing. And that's good news, too, considering what it could have been. But Johnny D is in Ohio, so welcome back to WGN Radio. How's it going?
I'm having some trouble with an email here, Raleigh. Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm here, but I was curious. I want to get to the email, but I was curious. So did you go yesterday? You were going to drive down to see it right at the totality zone. Did you see the eclipse?
I've seen it in all its glory and corona.
All right. Well, you sent me pictures, and I loved it, but there were pictures of you and Becky. Of course, I couldn't see pictures of the eclipse, so I assume you were wise enough not to take them.
Exactly, because after you told me that last week or whatever it was, I told the lovely and talented Becky, because now you ruin your phone.
Uh-huh.
Right? And I said, what are you talking about? So then she showed me somebody on TV saying that, you know, you can't do that because it's no good or something. Mess up your camera or something.
That's interesting.
We didn't.
I was not worried about your phone. I was worried about your eyes. But either way, you got to see it. You were wearing your special glasses. I saw that. And you were in the totality zone. Was it completely dark for a few minutes?
Yeah, it was. It got cold, you know, because we were out there. I was sitting on my back deck, if you've seen in the pictures, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen them.
Yeah, that's what I said.
My neighbors were having an eclipse party. They'd have one of them tents up, you know, and everything.
Good.
And I didn't go. I don't like my neighbors. But anyhow, no, I like them dry. So we went out there and, you know, me and Becky, and we had our shirts on, you know, this and that. It said night to eclipse 2024, this mm-hmm. and that. And I had on I was the fat cat in the bad hat. I put that in my email.
Yeah, no, you looked great. Both of you looked great.
Thank you. Yeah, I think I did, too. I like them pictures.
Mm-hmm.
I just got that hat. I ordered about three or four more of them, different colors.
All right.
Anyhow, what?
That's neat.
Yeah, that's cool.
Well, I'm glad you got to see it.
Yeah, so anyhow, listen.
Yes.
The reason I called, actually.
Yes.
Is that I wondered if you got them, well, that email, but then I also wondered, I've been trying here. I recorded that song as I was, No More Games. It was patterned up, I Wish It Would Rain.
Yes.
And I sent it. The email way that I normally do, and it kept saying...
How big is the attachment?
What?
How big is the attachment?
It was like 2 minutes. I don't know.
No, not time. What I'm saying is you might have saved it in a format that made it too big to transfer. You want to take a look at that. The size of the attachment might be what's bouncing it back.
I said offline. I wasn't offline. And were you?
No. And I've gotten plenty of emails. A number of them, including just another one from James seconds ago.
Hmm. Well, and then what should I do if I want to try to send it?
Well, you know, I don't know why you're getting that message. It sounds like the message is that you're offline, but you're able to do other things online, right?
Yeah, because I sent an email just with just words, you know, no attachments. And that supposedly went through, it looked like,
well,
you know.
I still think you need to find out how big the attachment is.
And then do what?
Well, if it is too big, then process it again to make it smaller. You're processing it as an MP3, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so let's say you were processing at a 320 stereo. You know, these are not missives we want forever. Try 128K mono.
Yeah, there's different settings.
Yeah, well, that changes the size of the file.
Oh, man.
But
I did something.
That's my only guess, and it is a guess. You could inspect the file, you know, right-click it, get info, and see what it says.
Yeah. Well, I never did all that with that because normally I got them to go through, but I'll see. I'll check it out.
That's my guess. If other email is going through and you're online, my guess is the file's too big to move anywhere.
Yeah, but it said, take this cough drop out. It said, I can't send it by Gmail.
Well,
FTP something.
Well, you don't have a place to FTP it, so that's not going to work.
Yeah.
But just make the file smaller and email it. You should be, if it's under 20 megs, you shouldn't have a problem.
And if it's 20 megs.
Yeah, and if it's an MP3, it should be really small. But occasionally, I'll be honest with you, usually it happens more with graphics than audio for me. But occasionally I'll save something as a PDF, and for whatever reason, I'll turn a file that should be, kilobits, and suddenly I'm seeing like 39 megabits. I'm like, what the hell did I do here? So that can happen.
I'll check it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, looking forward
to it.
All right,
Wally.
Okay,
and then, so be checking over... over the course of the show, if you
absolutely
can.
I will. You bet you will.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. So, yes, Clarence Frogman Henry no longer with us, and I just got an email from James, actually, that one of the Gap Band members died after surgery complications. That was Baby Gap Walker, 60 years old. Yeah, died in March in Ohio, and complications from neck surgery. And his younger brother reported it, but he died in March, so it's been a few weeks, and that's the deal. Other Gap members confirmed, gone too soon. Yes, indeed. So rest in peace. He performed with the Gap Band for 23 years, and good for him. And of course, Gap, named after Greenwood, Archer, and Pine Streets. In the Greenwood neighborhood, that's how they came up with the name. So, and by the way, the Greenwood neighborhood, infamous neighborhood, 1921 Tulsa. A lot of people don't realize what a thriving black population Tulsa had, particularly middle and upper middle class, and especially like stock market interests and all that kind of stuff. And they had a massacre in 1921, and just horrible. And for no damn good reason, as far as that goes. But that Greenwood neighborhood is where that massacre took place. So they took Greenwood, Archer, and Pine and came up with Gap Band. So there you have it. 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh. And even though, yeah, they took the name from Tulsa, sadly, Baby Gap, who is no longer with us, he was from Chicago. All right, so rest in peace for him. Now, Clarence Frogman Henry. Yeah, everybody's been talking about that, and rightfully so. He had an interesting life. He was as New Orleans as it gets, and we'll talk a little about that. And, of course, the song that really was associated with him more than any other, yeah, well, we'll play it next. And it got new life thanks to Rush Limbaugh, of all people. But we'll play that and some other stuff, too, coming up on WGN Radio.
Ooh, ain't got no home or no place to roam. Ain't got no home or no place to roam. I'm a lonely boy, I ain't got a home. I got a voice, I love to sing. I sing like a girl and I sing like a frog. I'm a lonely boy, I ain't got a home.
I
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, we're singing like a girl in the high-pitched voice. Actually, he's imitating Shirley of Shirley and Lee. That was his inspiration for that. He started doing the frog voice in high school. The girls always laughed, and it was fairly simple to do, just sing while you're breathing in. But it was interesting because, as I say, he was as New Orleans as it got. And he and Bobby Mitchell, who he went to high school with, had the rhythm and blues group, the Toppers, and this is the early 50s. He played trombone and piano on that, and Bobby Mitchell had been on Imperial, and Clarence did not get a deal with that. What happened was that Paul Gayton, the band leader, was an A&R scout for Chess in New Orleans, and he heard Clarence Frogman Henry. And Clarence Henry at the time, obviously. Frogman name came a little later. But the deal was he signed him to Chess. And that was, you know, had Leonard Chess fly him, fly in to check him out and hear him sing. And Leonard said, yep, sign him up. So the song was not cut in a Chess studio. It was, as you'd expect, Cosimo Matassas in New Orleans in 1956. And a lot of local musicians on that as well. And, of course, the flip was Troubles, Troubles, which was a great song because the lyrics were suicidal and the beat was happy and bouncy. So nonetheless, Ain't Got No Home got, of course, airplay in New Orleans. And it was Papa Stoppa, who was an R&B disc jockey, except Papa Stoppa was actually three different white guys, depending upon the time that we're talking about. And at that point, Papa Stoppa was a guy named Clarence Heyman. But on the air, he was just huge in New Orleans, and he broke it. And he said, here's the frog song by the Frogman. And that's how Clarence Frogman Henry, that's how that stuck. So that's where we'll pick it up. Yeah, with Clarence Frogman Henry's biggest hit, which does not feature the frog voice and didn't come for 5 years. All that and more coming up on WGN Radio. Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's a song that broke the dry spell for Clarence Frogman Henry. After Ain't Got No Home in 1956, they tried a number of follow-ups, all kind of in the same novelty genre, and nothing really became big enough that he would be anything but a one-hit wonder. And then here comes 1961, and he comes back with a vengeance. And But I Do, which is the title on the record, was originally titled I Don't Know Why, but there was confusion as to another I Don't Know Why, so they changed it to But I Do. But anyway, Paul Gayton wrote that with Bobby Charles. And if you look at the label, you'll see there ain't no Bobby Charles here. Well, yeah, there is. Robert Goodry is Bobby Charles' given name, and he wrote a lot of stuff. And so they had written it. In fact, as Bobby Charles, Robert Goodry recorded it himself. And he, Clarence Frogman Henry, originally in that 1956 session, had done it, and they just cast it aside. We're not going to use it, whatever. So here comes 61, and they do it again. They're back in Cosimo Matassas studio. This time they've got Alan Toussaint, who is producing it, and you know, they got a lot of session players that are just terrific. They put this out, and of course, you notice no more frog voice. Yeah, he's still Clarence Frogman Henry, although if you look at some of the labels, you don't see Frogman, but on the original Argo release of that in 61, oh yes you do, Clarence Frogman Henry. But you're not hearing the voice, you are hearing a hit. In fact, this record, top five on the Billboard Hot 100, went to number 4, which was higher than the Billboard R&B charts that topped out at number 9. And interestingly enough, biggest success came in Canada on the Chum chart. He was number 2. It was a big enough record in 1961 that it led him to go on tour in Great Britain. And these were the package tours, and you hear about them very often because it's not unusual that the Beatles were the opening act for some of these. But I think it was Bobby V and Clarence Frogman Henry and Tony Orlando and a couple other, mid-charters who were over there. But while he was there, there were some people who took notice, including one Brian Epstein, who actually, the way that Clarence Frogman Henry got on that Beatles tour wasn't so much that that Brian Epstein saw him in Great Britain, but rather that Henry's manager was somebody who had been involved with Epstein in some other tour ventures and stuff like that. So that's how that came together. But the 1964 tour was very interesting for the Beatles, as we've talked often. There was only one city they lost money, that city, New Orleans. And so Clarence Frogman Henry was playing his hometown. And by the way, it had little to do with the Beatles or Clarence Frogman Henry. They lost money because how that tour was put together is in each city, Brian Epstein would partner with a local radio station who would do all the promotion and the front stuff. But it went bad in New Orleans because originally it was going to be WTIX, and then the checks bounced. It was disc jockeys usually at these situations. And so they went to WTIX, and it became a mess. So Beatles did lose money. But hey, as far as that goes, Clarence Frogman Henry did very well. Now, unfortunately, in 1964, Chess dropped him. Yeah. And so right after that Beatles tour, they said, nah, ain't happening. And so what did he went to Huey Moe. Huey P. Moe, Louisiana's bad boy, to say the least, for a lot of reasons, did have hits with a number of people, put out several singles and absolutely nothing hit. Then he went to Dial for a while, which was Buddy Killen's Nashville label. And then finally he went to Roulette in 1969. Oh, man. And they released an album. Clarence Frogman Henry is alive and well, living in New Orleans and still doing his thing. Long title for an album, but there you have it. It failed to rekindle his career. However, there would be no pity party or any fundraising for Clarence Frogman Henry because he was huge on the Bourbon Street Strip. He played there for 19 years. 1983, he went back to Great Britain, recorded an album there, and had some minor chart stuff. But continued to perform, was a regular at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, and in fact, very sad. He was slated to appear this year, and he decided that he was going to walk. The reality is he had been in a wheelchair for a while and had problems, so he decided he was going to do back surgery. And sadly, he did the back surgery, came out of the hospital, went home, complications ensued, went back to the hospital, and were doing the obit. So unfortunate but true. He had a very interesting upbringing. I think he was in the 7th Ward originally, and then the family, while he was a kid, moved to Algiers on the West Bank, the other side of the river. And that's where he grew up and was first playing. He was married 7 times. Kid you not. Once was in high school, actually. And the marriages were interesting. Some were only a couple days long. Others produced offspring and things like that. But one of them, he married her twice. But nonetheless, that was the deal. And he was as New Orleans as it come. And if you had gone to his house, what you would see is the largest collection of frogs you can imagine. Whether it was stuffed or ceramic or glass or stone, it was a frog. And lined the shelves throughout his home. And other than that, a lot of memorabilia about his career, but he still had the piano he bought when he was 15 years old. So there you have Clarence Frogman Henry. Rest in peace. It was his daughter, Kathy Henry, who reported about the back surgery, which was done in February, and he was sure he was going to walk and play the Jazz Fest, and complications developed, and he was readmitted. Now, it's interesting because the Jazz Fest was slated to have a tribute to Gene Knight, Mr. Big Stuff, because she died last year. I have a feeling they'll be reworking that, and there will be certainly a segment and a tribute to Clarence Frogman Henry, as New Orleans as it gets. So 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh, if you listen to this show, I know you're a fan of radio, or else you wouldn't get through it. And I'm always telling you how great the Sea Crane Company is, but you probably know. And it all started many years ago when Bob Crane, like many of us, discovered that the radios that were being made at the time just had lousy reception. It just seems like nobody cared, particularly about AM, but FM too. And Bob thought, I can do better. And of course he did. Not only that, but today there are so many different radios, and the one thing they all have in common is absolutely killer reception. And in addition to that, all of them have neat features. And the latest is the CC Skywave SSB2, and that is just a terrific little radio. It can be your perfect travel radio, because you also get the aviation band, which is nice. That's right. NOAA weather and alert and a dial and presets. And it for the size of it, it really sounds good, too. And I think you should check it out. If you can go to ccradio.com, ccradio.com, look at the CC Skywave SSB2. It's the ultimate companion and emergency radio. Fits right in the palm of your hand, weighs 8 ounces. And like I say, terrific AM and terrific FM reception. And actually, the speaker, the audio is sharp and clear for considering how small it is. But the bottom line is you will hear things that you're not going to hear on your smartphone, and a single sideband is fascinating. Now, it might not be the place of choice for all the emergency responders today. It's fun to hear ham radio as well. But if you look further down the dial, hey, you can hear all of aviation too, which is a lot of fun. The only way to get this, of course, is with a sideband radio. And that's what the CC Skywave SSB2 is about, the true radio lovers travel radio. And you can read all about SSB, single sideband. We've talked on the air about it. But one of the new features of this radio is there's a new shortwave antenna jack, which significantly improves your shortwave reception. Because when it comes to shortwave, you got to use an external antenna. You got to have something coming out of that radio. And this is really terrific. And the new micro USB connector works well from any USB port, along with improved in-circuit battery charging and all sorts of neat features. But to me, just having the best reception is enough for me. So look at it. It's the CC Skywave SSB2. If you can't go online, you can give them a call. They have the world's best customer service, and they will be happy to tell you all you want to know, answer all your questions, take an order over the phone if you like, or send you a hard copy of the catalog if you like. So that is 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. But better yet, if you can go online, ccradio.com, ccradio.com. Look at the CC Skywave SSB2 and a lot of other things, too. You'll find something you just got to have. You tell them Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio.
Sweet summer sweets, sugar for my heart. Your tasty kiss fills me so. Sweet summer sweets, sugar for my heart. I'll never ever let you go.
If you want it, the star that shines so brightly.
I'm Raleigh James. And yes, that's the Drifters, but the voice doing lead is Charlie Thomas. And Charlie would have been 87 over the weekend. That would have been his 87th birthday Sunday. Born in 1937 in Lynchburg, Virginia. Died last year, January 31st of 2023, in Bowie, Maryland, 85 years old. Of course, that was the second group of Drifters. George Treadwell, who was the manager and owned the name, disbanded the first group because he didn't think they were, I don't know the word I would look for, but not giving them enough, whatever. In any event, he thought, I'll just get me another group of Drifters, which is what he did. He went and found the Five Crowns. And, of course, Benny King was a lead singer of that group and said, okay, you guys can be the Drifters now. And they were. And it was interesting because, of course, before he went in and had them recorded, they did a tour. And so for a year, it was a tour of the Drifters who weren't the Drifters. And so there was a bit of acrimony on that for the fans who realized these aren't the same guys, you know, that kind of thing. And there had been a lot of changes in the first group of Drifters as well. But then they got together with Lieber and Stoller, and who took them into the studio. And in fact, Lieber and Stoller produced Sweets for My Sweet, but it was a Doc Pomus, Mort Schumann record. They wrote it, 1961. So, yeah, but that was Charlie Thomas on lead. He was also on lead on When My Little Girl Is Smiling and some others as well. So rest in peace to Charlie Thomas. But while I was adding, I was mentioning that sadly, Clarence Frogman Henry wasn't the only passing. We had another Drifter. And this was Joe Blunt. This guy actually was a Drifter on stage, much more than on record, because he joined the group in about 1975. And, you know, the group was fluid as far as the members, but he was there for a good 10 years. And in any event, he is no longer with us, sad to say. He 74 years old. So he was from D.C. originally and was in a number of groups, none of which you've probably heard of, believe me. But in 75, he hit with the Drifters, certainly in all their many, many, many performances, because this was the time of all the oldies revival shows. So 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh, had to think a minute. Russ is in Des Plaines. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh. How are you today?
All right. How about yourself?
Yeah, let me check. Okay.
Okay, good, good. Well, all the pieces are together. So you got some requests for me?
I was at the doctor's, and he said I am pretty good except for the high triglycerides, so I got to watch that, you know.
I wouldn't worry too much about that. If that's your only problem, you're doing really well.
I've always, actually, they're good for me. I've had them as high as 800 years ago when I used to hit the sauce, you know. Yeah, I do have a, before I give you the request, Johnny B, you know?
Yeah, Johnny D, yes.
Him and I, we have the same birth date.
Oh.
Anyway,
well, happy belated
I
birthday.
Let him know if he's, March 28th.
Yeah, happy belated birthday to you.
Oh, thank you. I think I'm a year older than him.
Okay.
Anyway, I wanted to let him know, if he's listening, if on our birthday, there's two singers that are on our birthday, and one is Lady Gaga.
Nice. That's good company.
And Reba McEntire.
Okay. Both sound good to me.
Yeah. So anyway, that being said.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was funny. I heard when he called, he ended up calling on his birthday. And I said, oh, geez, we got the same birthday. And then he was saying, I think he had a blood test or something done that day or the day before. And I did, too. I said, what's going on here?
Oh, man, I don't know. But, yeah, also, you also share a birthday with Charlie McCoy, best harmonica player ever. And he was born in 1941 on March
28th. There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, he's 10 years older than me, so.
Well, he's still with us.
Is he still living?
Yeah, he's still living and still playing the harp. Does a great job.
Oh, good for them. Okay, yeah. The request would be the Temptations, Since I Lost My Baby.
Okay.
And William DeVoe, Be Thankful for What You Got.
Yeah, William DeVoe, you betcha. All right, we'll do it.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. Appreciate it, Russ. All right, that's easy enough to satisfy. I can do that next hour, actually. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. We can talk about absolutely anything when all else fails. Yes, I still have that big crop of tabloids here. Yeah, haven't even really gotten into that. The Globe is going to tell us what Epstein had on Trump. Harry and Meghan may leave the U.S., I know. It's a lot of fun. That's to say the least. And Melania and Ivanka's nasty war exposed. Well, I think they've got about 3 billion reasons to detest each other, if that accounting is anywhere near accurate. All that and more will come up next hour. I hope you'll join us. Yeah, I'm pleading. Okay. So until then, that's Raleigh James on WGN Radio.
Shining, there's plenty of light. A new day is dawning, sunny and bright. But after I've been crying all night, the sun is cold and the new day seems old. Since I lost my baby,
since I lost my baby,
since I lost my baby,
since I lost my baby.
Are singing and the children are playing. There's plenty of work and the bosses are paying. Not a sad word should a young heart be saying. But
fun is a bore
and with money a poor. Since I lost my baby,
since I lost my baby.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. You say it, I play it. There you are. The Temptations on Gordy, 1965. Smokey produced and co-wrote Since I Lost My Baby. All right, 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, and I looked at the screen and said, Wardo wanted to talk about high school financial literacy, and what do I hear on WGN minutes ago? Yeah, talk about the lack of financial literacy. I'm sure that's absolutely true. So, Eduardo, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, Raleigh, thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I thought this was interesting. Well, speaking of UConn, they just won the basketball championship, and they mentioned that they now are going to require that high school students take a couple classes in financial literacy, and they're like the 21st, 22nd state to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know that they had that required. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, there's an organization that actually FINRA, FINRA does too, but there's a financial literacy organization as well that dispenses these tests. And what's really shocking is when you take a look at the results. Forget about high school, just people in general. There's a 7-question FINRA test. While I saw this on the screen, I thought I'll take it. And so the 7 questions, I got 7 right. No shock there. They weren't hard questions. The shock was that the national average was only 3 right. That means the average person missed 4 of the simplest questions that I can possibly find. I think that's probably true. And I'd be real curious with high school at this point, what percentage of kids come anywhere close to a passing grade?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's important, especially now that in a way that this is coming to news as far as getting people's, particularly in college, getting their debt, some of it kind of reduced.
Yeah, sadly, and I've told this story before, but years ago I had a listener in Wilmington who worked for Discover, and he called me and he said, you just won't believe it. He was in their call center, and he said he had a girl call who was a college girl who said, you've cut off my card. And he looked it up and said, well, you have a $500 limit. You spent $500 and you haven't paid any back. She said, there was nothing that said I had to pay it back. I mean... And this girl was in college, and he continued to query her about this. And sure, she thought that she just got $500 a month for doing nothing and never had to pay anything back. And it does make you wonder. She probably went to a state institution, but even so, how she got in there. But the questions are fairly basic, and the average person does not know. And years ago, they used to teach business math in school, and I thought that was a great little course. And I remember very well taking it. And, you know, you'd have to do things like you'd have to open a bank account and buy one share of stock and all that kind of stuff. And you had to, you know, learn about interest rates and all that kind of stuff. And it made all the sense in the world. But as the emphasis went more towards, you know, college admittance and let's do algebra and plane geometry and trig and analytic and all that, business math kind of went away.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. But, yeah, I think it is important that young people really learn about that because...
Well, why young people? It's important that everybody learn about it. If we're saying on a simple seven-question test, and I mean, it's really simple. Like, suppose you have $100 in saving and you earn 2% interest a year. After 5 years, how much would you have? More than $102? Exactly $102. Less than $102. Now, come on. You know, it doesn't take Einstein to answer that. And that the questions are on that level. And to say that the average person is missing half of them, you know, what? So, you know, it's frightening to me. And I would hope that more would be done along these lines.
So, yeah, definitely.
Now, I don't know, are any states requiring this? And in what form is it taking? Like, in other words, what class are the kids learning it? I don't think they're going to, you know, interrupt Calc 1 or, you know, or Trig. So where are they taking it?
Yeah, that'd be interesting to know about that. The article didn't get into that, but it would be interesting to know which classes they are going to be taking.
Yeah, where would this come into the curriculum in many cases?
Yeah.
Unless you're talking junior high and you're talking, you know, seventh or eighth grade math, but arithmetic, basically. Other than that, I don't see where in the curriculum, what, they're going to teach it in homeroom? I mean, I don't know. So that's
somewhere in there.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. Somewhere in there. But when you think about it and you think about what the courses usually are, where? So unless they have courses I don't know about, some potpourri, you know, thing. So, yeah. So, yeah, I think it's a great idea. And sadly, as I say, it's not confined to school kids. The average person is financially illiterate, period.
Yeah, hopefully that's going to improve.
Well... Yeah, when you look at, what is it, I read somewhere $1 trillion in debt is out there now, something better happen.
Oh, yeah, I mean, with our debt, our government debt, yeah.
Well, not only our government debt, personal, you know, personal credit card debt is ridiculous. You know, and especially people paying the minimum, they'll die before they pay it off. You know, for many cases. So
yeah, or trying to go into 401k as savings accounts. So yeah.
So I was just looking, according to Wallet Hub, in the second quarter of 2024, where we only have days of this. So I don't see how they know that, but they're saying consumers took on an additional $43 billion in credit card debt. Now I assume that was might be second quarter reported of 2024, but it had to be first quarter action because I don't think anybody's going to do that in 9 days. But you know, part of it, of course, is when interest rates rise, and you know the credit card rates are pretty much confiscatory. But you know, it's just a horrendous thing when you read that Americans have racked up over $1 trillion in credit card debt. This is astronomically bad. I believe the last thing I read at the end of the year last year was something like $17 trillion in credit card debt.
It's pretty high up there, yeah.
And there was an article that I read that said that's actually okay. Okay, well, I live in a different universe. Absolutely different universe than that.
So. Yeah, I mean, I'm a person who doesn't really like credit cards. I like to pay stuff in cash or, you know, save, and so...
Well, if you're not running any balance, credit cards are your friends, because if you pay it off in full at the end of the month with the cashback cards, you can get 2% just for using the damn card. The problem is if you don't pay it off in full.
Right.
So, you know, with those 2 and 3% card cashbacks, hell, I'll even put a big gulp from 7-Eleven on it. You know, I'll take my 2%. Thank you very much. You know, but but never would I allow, you know, interest to accrue because that would just be ridiculous, you know. But
no, that's the killer, yeah.
Yeah, right. But without interest, no, they're giving me money, and I'm grateful for it.
Yeah. Just a couple things on the possible job coming
yes,
up.
Yes, I was just going to ask.
I got a couple of things. There'll be more stuff coming up later, but looks like it's going to be like 10-hour days.
4-day week.
Yeah.
Good. That's good.
Starting like 7 p.m. somewhere around there.
That's good.
There's another department in the respiratory area that they're putting up out there that they're going to throw more people there. So okay. It looks like an expanding department. So that's pretty good.
Sounds great. So, yeah. 10-hour days, 4 days a week is a good schedule. So it'd be 7 p.m. to 5 a.m. Nothing wrong with that.
Oh, no. No, it's good. It's good. Yeah.
Well, hopefully you will get that. Keep us posted.
Yeah, more details to come, definitely.
Looking forward to it. Thanks.
All right. I'll get you to the next call. Thank you, Raleigh.
Appreciate it. Yeah, we will talk to Roger from LaGrange here in moments, and there's room for you, too, on WGN Radio. Would have expected 1974 to hit the charts. It was recorded in 73 on Roxbury. Originally, Chelsea had it out as well, but Roxbury. William Devon, he wrote it and recorded it. 888-876-5593 takes us to Roger in LaGrange. What's up, Roger?
Hi. I was out treasure hunting over the weekend, and I found a recording by Louis Armstrong mm-hmm. doing the Gut Bucket Blues.
1925.
Oh, okay. And so I'm looking it up online, and I see there's like a whole bunch of different artists at that time doing that type of music. I guess that was a regular type of music.
Well, a gut bucket is basically a washtub bass, and it was used throughout the South. You use a metal washtub as a resonator, and you can use like a broomstick, and then you put a string on it. And usually it's a single string. And the deal is you can adjust the pitch by pushing or pulling the staff. In other words, you put a foot on the washtub so you're holding it to the ground, and then you can push or pull up on the staff or the stick to change the tension, and then you can pick it. And
okay.
So
well,
early 1900s, and then used again later in the 50s, some of the folk music groups and all that kind of stuff used it. They'd call it jug band influence music, things like that. But as far as when you say Gut Bucket Blues song, like I said, that was 1925, but the meaning is basically it was supposed to be brings out joy, you know, and has an obvious beat to it. And I always use the phrase, frankly, just meaning hardcore, you know, like Gut Bucket Blues.
Well, what I was wondering is if you would have any interesting examples of that, that would be my request for tonight.
You know, I don't know if I can do that tonight because I have absolutely no idea if I have anything on this computer where I am, but I will look to see if I do. Because it's normally not something that I would, you know, that I would personally like. But that's not to say there isn't anything on it. So I'll have a look.
Well, yeah, it's nothing. I'm more like, you know, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin.
Oh, well, that I can't help you with. Yeah. Because, you know, that's absolutely outside of anything I would consider playing.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, this Gut Bucket Cake, I got real interested in that all of a sudden.
Yeah, I could see the connection.
Somebody's basement.
Yeah. All right, good deal. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. No, I could see that connection and never been an album rock fan, period. But of course, I love some of the early stuff that Jimi Hendrix did. Yeah, he used to play at the Peppermint Lounge and did a number of things in Nashville, too. But, of course, the stuff that made him famous was not the kind of stuff that I would want to have to hear. But I could see that that kind of connection to Gut Bucket Blues. All right, I'll look for something. Why not? If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. And I'd sure appreciate your call, 888-876-5593. And other than that, like I say, it's a threat or a promise. I don't know. You know, some people will email and say, please don't look at the tabloids. And other people say, why aren't you reading the tabloids anymore? And usually we just run out of time, but I think we can probably find something of quasi-interest here coming up. Yeah, maybe I have to look pretty hard for that. But otherwise, your call will trump all. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
Ah!
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Bobby Smith. Yeah, Mr. Fan. Loved her. She was a Detroit singer for a while. They had the Dream Girls. In fact, one of the Andantes was in that group for a little while. They did a Duchess of Earl kind of answer record to Duke of Earl. But I thought she was terrific. And later, she did Walk On Into My Heart, which is a great song. And of course, Mr. Fine, a lovely record. And I thought of her because I read, oh my God, here we have Bobby Smith's birthday. Wrong Bobby Smith. All right, this one's from the Spinners, of course, who would turn 88 tomorrow, born in 1936 in Detroit. So I was thinking, well, I know that Bobby Smith, the one you just heard from Mr. Fine, she was from Detroit too. And so I look, And sure enough, I see Bobby, because it's B-O-B-B-I-E, since she's a girl, right? Bobby Smith, dead at 76. I'm like, what? And no, that was actually the other Bobby Smith. I just spelled that wrong. Or maybe they didn't. I don't know. But nonetheless, I'm still on the lookout for what happened to this Bobby Smith. So, but sadly, the other Bobby Smith, who would have been 88 tomorrow, who sang lead on That What Girls Are Made For and Truly Yours, I'll Always Love You, I'll Be Around, shared lead with Felipe Wynn with Could It Be I'm Falling In Love and Games People Play with Purvis Jackson and all that. And then came you. And all right, so nonetheless, he died in 2013 in Orlando from pneumonia and influenza, but also had lung cancer at the time. Sadly, no spinners left, no original spinners left. Henry Fambro died in February, and then there were none. All right, so I probably at least tonight won't resolve what happened to my Bobby Smith, but maybe we'll play some Walk On Into My Heart while I continue to look for Gut Bucket music. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And Bruce and Elwood, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh. How you doing?
I don't know.
You know, I feel the same way. I'm uneasy and anxious, and I just can't put my finger on why. Yeah. And I do know why. It's because the world's so crazy, but, I mean...
Well, that would be a problem. No, in my case, I just can't stop vomiting, but that's about it for me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was funny.
I figured you were sick, because I heard him say in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
2 minutes, so I knew you had went.
Mm. Yeah. No, it was earlier I had to host one of the locals in where I have radio stations in Globe, one of the, you know, local dignitary type politicians.
Yeah.
And in the middle of it, I said, you've got to go talk for yourself right now for a while. And I left the room. Oh. And what I didn't know, John said, it was audible. I'm like, oh, God. I told him later, I said, it was nothing you said, really. We were determining earlier, you know, could I do this tonight? But so far, so good. So I guess I can't complain.
Yeah, you sound okay, but you cover it up so well.
Yeah, voice-wise, I'm very good at that. Thank God it's not television. But voice-wise, yeah. So what's on your mind? Tell me.
Well, a little bit about this Drew Peterson and the Stacey Peterson thing.
Oh, so Drew wants a new trial.
Yeah, well, no, he, you know what? He doesn't really want a new trial.
He doesn't?
He can't. Well, that's weird. That courthouse is... I've been between the giant and the courthouse. I'm being like Forrest Gump.
Good.
That courthouse is only like 5 miles from me.
Good.
All the big news. But anyway, he filed for the trial, but I don't think he wanted to be declared insane.
Well, that's right. And apparently the judge would not even order a competency hearing, so he doesn't even have to undergo a test. But, you know,
well, he really didn't want the trial. He wanted to have the trial, but then be declared incompetent, and then they couldn't try him, and they would let him out.
Right, except they wouldn't. They'd put him in a mental hospital forever, but maybe that would be better digs. I don't know. But it's so weird, because I have a girlfriend who's going through a divorce in her late 70s, if you're ready for that. Her husband, husband found another girl, you know. So anyway, one of the things that his lawyers brought up is, we need a competency hearing for her, my friend. And, of course, she's as competent as I am. Maybe that's questionable, but nonetheless... the bad part was they ordered it. She's perfectly fine, but she had to pay for it. So it's like I paid $1,000 to find out I'm as sane as I've always been. So when I saw that with Drew Peterson, I kind of laughed. But that's interesting. That's actually very clever by his lawyers, because if he was declared unfit to would it overturn the other conviction? And if it did, I don't know what would happen. That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know, but that was what the plan seemed to be. Is the
it didn't
he's
work.
Got, he's actually he's at a point now where he has public defenders.
That's right. That's right. Who can be good or bad depending, but if it's somebody who wants to make a name for themselves and is going to work really hard, that can work to your benefit. But I was looking at the photos they had, and I'm not so sure I'd go there. But so while he's fighting, and of course this is the Kathleen Savio murder, there's another issue with, well, of course, wives and missing and dead. So what else is going on with...
Well, and the other thing real quick is in the same courtroom, right after they take Drew out, then Joel Brodsky goes in there because he's on trial for breaking the silence. That was his original lawyer.
Right, exactly. And so I understand he did it pro se. So, you know, when you represent yourself, you've got an idiot for a client. But so apparently from what I heard on him is that he's kind of skating on this. But what's the special prosecutor said Brodsky violated it. Brodsky asked the judge to dismiss. And I don't think the judge denied that. And at that point, what, he asked for a speedy trial? So maybe next month we'll hear about that.
Yeah. And then the thing with Drew, even if he got that that overturned, he still gets sentenced to 40 years for the hit he put out on the prosecutor.
Right.
More than he got for the original murder. And there was something I meant to talk about the last time we talked. Did you ever hear about Drew's Law?
No.
Okay. Well, first off, they think they might have found his wife in the canal up near Lamont, Illinois. The sister, what was her name? Stacy. They found a thing there. Stacy hired an outfit to go in there with side scan sonar, and they found a skeleton, they think, in the canal near near Romeoville, actually, where he lived.
Okay.
They're trying to get the money to go down there and look. But there was a thing I met. You probably, being in the law, there's a law called Drew's Law in Illinois now.
Is this a hearsay law?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what
and
I was
that's thinking. Who the person who brought it in, who got it through was the Jim Glasgow, who he put the hit on.
Right.
And actually, Stacy testified from the grave through her minister.
Right.
To put Drew into prison. Because she knew about Kathleen, and she told her minister, and then, I mean, of course, the conjecture is Drew killed her. So they passed Drew's Law.
But what I
that's what it is called.
Yeah, I think it's about exceptions to hearsay. And if I'm right about that, then this was something that they passed, and originally everybody was all, you know, looking at this and how serious this is. And it turns out, when it's read closely, and I've not read it, but when it's read closely, that it really only applies to Drew in this case, that people don't need to tremendously worry about it affecting them.
Well, you know, Will County, it's in Will County, Illinois.
Yes.
That's like the second biggest county in the, you know, right behind Cook County.
Right.
And they got some pretty sharp prosecutors and stuff up there. And that Jim Glasgow, he's been in there for like 20 years. And he was, they were out to get Drew. And he went to the state legislature and got that law passed. And they took the testimony from Stacy's minister. And that was one of the big parts of the conviction.
Right, right.
And, you know, it was called Drew's Law because, like you said, it's tailored pretty tight for circumstances that can be used in.
Right, and what it would be exemption to hearsay. You know, I've never had to deal with criminal trials, thank God, but for a while I was an expert witness in California in media trials, and, you know, I'd get calls. I probably did a dozen total, not more than that, but a couple arbitration, and the others were actual trials. And it was truly chilling to me because I came away really thinking that this isn't really a way to find truth or not. It's the game of court. It's like Milton Bradley wrote the laws of what you can and cannot do. It was just, I thought to myself, man, I never better be having a trial because what they would allow or wouldn't allow, you know, and I can only sit in parts of this, obviously, because parts of it, before I testified. But what I would see was just horrendous. And truly at the whim of the judge du jour, so to speak. And, you know, I don't know that I wouldn't know of a better system necessarily, but I just know that this one truly was frightening to me.
Yeah, I was on a jury one time, and it was a one-week trial for malpractice for a dental oral surgeon. And, I mean, they brought in experts from out of state. And
oh, sure.
I know more about dental implants than
At this point, right, I'm sure you do. But Everybody I know who's done jury duty has enjoyed the experience from the standpoint of really feeling that the jurors were in a position to truly weigh evidence. But when the evidence is withheld from them, it becomes another matter.
Yeah, yeah.
So how did you find for the dentist? Was he guilty of malpractice?
No, he wasn't.
Okay. All right.
And she, there were some other circumstances where she didn't follow the instructions and all that stuff. And you know, it's kind of funny because we finished up like at 5 o'clock. It was an over a 1 week trial on it.
Right, right.
Because it was like big money. It was like $5 million or something.
Yeah.
And actually, when it was over, it was a female judge, and she came into the jury room and thanked us all for our deliberation careful consideration and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not unusual. They usually do, and most juries are truly, I think, very respectable in terms of trying to do the right thing. It's not necessarily a case of the old joke of a jury is 12 people too dumb to get out of jury duty. Although I will say that it really bothers me when people try to shirk that responsibility, because if it was them on trial, they would want the best jurors they could get.
It was funny because a guy I worked with on the same shift with me in another part of my building, he was called at the same time.
Oh, wow.
We were sitting there laughing. We were laughing, and they took both of us.
Oh, wow. All right. All right.
Because they interviewed him, and when I got to me, they said, well, where are you working? I'm like, with him.
Right. Yeah, all right. Well, that's voir dire. They're allowed a certain amount of preemptions, but nobody was going to throw away a preemption on you worked at the same place, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But, anyway, it's going to be interesting to see what, I think this backfired on Drew, because now he's going to get his trial.
Well, that's
because they found him competent.
He is competent. Well, that's going to be interesting. And, you know, I assume that it'll wind up the same. And like you say, sort of like our Murdaugh buddy in South Carolina, who ain't getting out of jail ever. You know, even if something were to happen and Drew Peterson were have something overturned, there's so much left.
Yeah. In fact, I think he was convicted in 2016 or something for the hit on the prosecutor, but I think he was only sentenced a couple of months ago.
That happens.
But anyway, he got like 40 years. He got 25 years for Kathleen Savio and 40 years for the prosecutor and their... What is it? Consecutive, not concurrent. Consecutive.
Right.
So he's got to do the 25 or 20, whatever 20,
and then the next 40. Kick in. Yes, exactly. He'll be there the rest of his life. I hope that he's able to decorate his cell. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay, good deal. Keep me posted. Will County's getting to be a bastion of excitement.
Yeah, sure is.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Holly.
888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh, we'll get to Fran and Austin. Tom Lehrer. Oh, I love Tom Lehrer. All right, we'll talk about that and more coming up on WGN Radio.
Counting sheep when you're trying to sleep, being fair, when there's something to share, being neat, when you're folding a sheet. That's mathematics when a ball bounces off of a wall, when you cook from a recipe book, when you know how much money you owe. That's mathematics. How much gold can you hold in an elephant's ear? When it's noon on the moon, then what time is it here? If you could count for a year, would you get to infinity or somewhere in that vicinity? When you choose how much postage to use, when you know what's the chance it will snow, when you bet and you end up in debt. Oh, try as you may, you just can't get away from mathematics.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That's probably the last thing that Tom Lehrer released, actually. 1993, that's Mathematics, was the closing credits to a Mathematical Sciences Research Institute video. And I think it celebrated the proof of Fermat's Last Theorem, in case you're taking notes. In 2020, Tom Lehrer made all of his songs public domain. We'll talk about that. We'll talk to Fran about Tom Lehrer. And thank God it wasn't that he died. I was really worried about that when I saw her thing. So we'll pick it up right there next hour right here on WGN Radio. We'll be right back. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that is Bobby Smith. Yeah, I loved that song. It was the flip side of Miss Stronghearted, and I was just sitting here trying to see if I could find out anything else about Bobby Smith, and I didn't. But I did find TomLayerSongs.com, where you can download like 97 of his songs, which is basically all of them, because he's turned it into a public domain. Now, the good news is you absolutely can download them. The bad news is they're at about 45 kilobits for the file, so we're not talking about terribly high quality, but you might want to go there soon because I'm not sure how long the website will be up. So, Fran, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. Yeah, fortunately, I've got a box set with all kinds. I had all of the albums. That was the year that was. And
right.
The Worst of Tom Lehrer and An Evening Wasted with Tom Lehrer.
Right.
I had all the vinyl, and then I got all the CDs. But, yeah, he did a lot of, I mean, he was just, I wanted to know about the Jell-O shots you were saying yesterday. That was what it was. How did he wind up inventing the Jell-O shot, of all things?
Yeah, absolutely. I know. And he's credited.
I can believe it. I mean,
right. He's credited with it, and, you know, apparently, there are a number of people who attribute it to him, and alcoholic beverages to the gelatin mixture, so it's what's the deal? Well, the exact origin isn't known. Now, of course, Jell-O goes back to 1897, so that's clearly prior to Tom Lehrer, and no doubt somebody probably tried the combination before this, but it was in the 50s when Jell-O was actually at the height of its popularity, and apparently Tom Lehrer claimed to have invented the Jell-O shot as a way to circumvent a ban on alcohol at a Navy base he was stationed at. And he said,
"I can believe that."
He said,
"That sounds very That sounds very much like Tom,
right.
Tom Lehrer would do."
Supposedly, he and a friend were barred from bringing alcoholic beverages to the Christmas party at a naval base, so they mixed orange Jell-O with vodka in cups so the mixture could be smuggled into the party. That supposedly is the deal. And many people have stood up for this explanation, saying, yep, it was definitely Tom Lehrer. And it was sad because by the 1960s, sales of Jell-O were in a steep decline, as you can imagine. But Jell-O shots themselves remained in demand.
Oh, yeah. I haven't had one in about 20 years, but I have had them.
Yeah. Well, so that was it. Way to circumvent the Navy regulations about liquor at the Christmas party.
Okay, yeah. That reminds me of his song, "It Makes a Fellow Proud to Be a Soldier."
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's a good one.
His stuff was great.
He did a lot of stuff for, I think it was for Electric Company or one of those, because he did Silent E.
Right. Right. Oh,
and
yeah.
And then there was the one with words with SN, like sniff, snore, and sneeze. I think that one was.
Right. LY. Yeah. A number of.
LY.
Yeah.
Oh, I love LY.
Yeah, a number of things like that.
Immediately.
Right. Exactly. But when I saw on the screen and it had your name and underneath it, it said Tom Lehrer. I said, oh, please, dear God, don't let it be that he died. So
No. I was just. He's 92 now?
96.
Wow. 96. Yeah. Okay.
96.
90 something.
He was born in.
Wow.
He was born in 28.
And
He graduated. He graduated from Harvard in 46.
Wow. I knew somebody that I guess, knew somebody who knew somebody who was in his class at Harvard, and any time they had any kind of social get together, you could bet that he would be. He would commandeer a piano somewhere and start doing his songs. But and some of them I listened to, that was the year that was not too long ago, and I'm thinking, some of this is still the same.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, that's the reality. Names change and faces change, but times, they don't change. So,
yeah,
absolutely.
And I was thinking, I wonder what, he might have still been writing stuff, but not doing it publicly. I wonder what he would write today.
Well, he's been
writing. If he were still writing satirical songs,
he's been interviewed over the years, and in terms of that, I think there was one. I don't remember if it was the Washington Post, the New York Times. One of them asked him. He said, "A public comment? Tell them I'm voting for Obama. That's it." And so. Yeah, it was all he had. It was all he had to all he had to say. But I don't think he's recorded anything other than, you know, some of the kid show stuff. But in a good 50 years, and I don't think he performs anymore at all. Near as I know, he's still in California because he had, you know, gone out there to teach and stayed
there.
Yeah,
I think he was teaching at Santa Cruz.
Right, exactly right. And he stayed in Santa Cruz, and. You know, so the bottom line is, like I say, he's now made everything public domain. And I think he realizes, you know, it's not like he has kids and people to leave things to. He realizes that his time will come and he doesn't want an issue of it. He just wants it to be a situation where people can have the music any way they want it. And so that website.
That's, yeah,
you know,
I think that's great.
I do, too. I do, too.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And, yeah, I was, you know, curious about the Jell-O shots. That's so Tom Lehrer. And I know he was interviewed one time, and they asked him if he would ever consider performing or, you know, doing any new comedy performance, mm-hmm. and he said no.
Right, right.
He said that the time for that was done, and that unfortunately, basically what he was saying was we don't have the sense of humor anymore.
Right.
About ourselves.
Right, I think that's true. Like one interview, his only comment was, he said, "What could I say about George Bush?" You know, so you know, he certainly was biased in his politics, but he was funny as all get out, and it was at a time when you could be funny and when people could laugh. But yeah, I don't think he wants a bit of it now. But
well,
yeah, he's still with us, and
you know, I've always had friends from different sides of the political spectrum, and I am not. I don't like to stick a little, you know, capital L sign on my head or a capital C sign. I think for myself. I'm liberal on some things, conservative on others. But people used to be able to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's gotten downright vitriolic.
Yeah, and I've seen myself doing it just as much as it's, you know, it's not just everybody around me. It's me, too. And it's just, you know, I remember days when, you know, someone goes, "Oh, I remember the old days when, you know, when conservatives and liberals could talk to each other at the dinner table, you know, and things like that." And I mean, certainly my, you know, there were plenty of arguments, but we came away, at least sometimes we could come away friends. Still.
Well, you know, you see it. It's like there's no secret. I used to do very political talk shows, no doubt about it. And you can't really do that now. Now, for a long time, and I don't know, maybe forever, no one actually wants to hear another side of the story. They want to hear their opinion validated. And I understand that.
Exactly.
You're always preaching to the choir, like people who would say, "Well, you're a danger. You're going to change public opinion." I said, "I wish, you know, that doesn't work like that. I preach to the choir." But it used to be, not vitriolic. It was not mean-spirited. Nobody felt like their life was hanging in the balance. And it's absolutely the divisiveness. Now, I was talking to somebody today who's a local politician in Arizona in terms of, you know, do you want to run again? And if not, why? And basically, you know, it's gotten too much for me, is what they're saying. And I understand that. You know, I can't for the life of me understand how anybody would ever run for something like president or whatever, because you're going to be so investigated. I don't care who you are, what side of the aisle, what it is. It'll be like a proctological examination of your entire family tree. And who would do that to people they love? You know, see, that's what I don't get. I can't imagine anybody would, that's why I say, you know, a definition of politics, poly is many and ticks are blood-sucking parasites, end of story.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, and that's really about it. But you almost, you have to have some unholy agenda, I think, to subject yourself and your family to that. So, you know, I think it's a self-fulfilled prophecy that we get, you know, who we get. But so that's why we've sort of carved this out to, all right, when all else fails, we'll read the tabloids. We'll talk about Tom Lehrer or whatever. But yeah, when he,
right.
When he was doing, you know, TW3, that was a week that was in the early 60s, it was not mean-spirited. And the other thing is, he could do a song that maybe I would politically disagree 100% with the sentiments behind it, but the words were clever and the concept was clever and I loved it. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And that was, I remember in back in 64, the Chad Mitchell Trio, communists that they were.
I love them.
Yeah, yeah, well, they came out with Barry's Boys, you know, where the bright young men who want to go back to 1910 were Barry's Boys.
We're Barry's Boys.
Yeah, where the kids, yes, who agree to be social without security were Barry's Boys.
yeah, and, I like that.
Yeah, I thought that was and I was in 64 an ardent supporter of Barry Goldwater, but I still loved that song because I thought it was clever, it was well done. I didn't have to agree with the sentiment, so that it's not that way anymore.
Right? Yeah. I mean, yeah. Draft Dodger Rag is another one.
Oh,
that,
well, yes, boy, absolutely. That is just the best.
But it's just, you know, so clever.
And, yeah, it is.
You know, it's just funny.
Yeah, that's, yeah, I'm just a typical American boy from a typical American town. I believe in God and Senator Dodd and keep
an old Castro down.
When it came to time of serve, I knew better dead than red. When I got told, load to report, this is what I said. Sarge, I'm only 18. I got a ruptured spleen. It was a great song.
Always carry a purse. Yes. I got eyes looking back.
My feet are flat and my asthma's getting worse. Oh, think of my career, my sweetheart dear, and my poor old invalid aunt.
Poor old invalid aunt.
I ain't no fool. I'm going to school and I'm working at a defense plant. Exactly. Exactly. And it was just clever as or a lot of the Phil Oaks stuff, just clever stuff. So yeah.
Oh yeah, that was sad about him. Yeah. Oh,
I know. The words wouldn't come anymore. Well, you know, sadly he took himself seriously. The rest of us were just enjoying and having fun with his lyrics, and he was serious as a heart attack. So
yeah.
Yeah. And his brother, of course, has made a fortune because he has the rights to just about every rock photograph out there. So,
really?
Oh, yeah. Michael Oakes. Oh, man. Yeah. You look at some of these photographs and it's almost all Michael Oakes. So he did very well.
One thing I liked about Phil Oakes is that he did poke fun at liberals.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Like that song, one of the ones I love, and a lot of living around here reminds me of this song, Love Me, I'm a Liberal.
Yeah, right. Right.
And so, yeah, and if I think about that song, and I think, you know, he could see through, you know. Anyway, I'm getting political, and
it actually is just, you know, the time, society. I always thought Small Circle of Friends was just a wonderful song.
You know, oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
That was the only big so-called hit, I think.
That was a hit? I didn't know that was a hit. Who the hell played it other than me?
Oh, KYA played it all the time.
Oh, did they? All right.
Yeah.
Well, how about that? No, I don't know that I ever heard it.
That's where I heard it when I was living in the Bay Area, and I was listening to KYA, and they played it constantly.
Yeah, smoking marijuana is more fun than drinking beer. But
more fun than drinking beer.
Yeah, a friend of us got captured, and they gave him 30 years. Maybe we should call him. Yeah, right. So,
ask somebody why.
Yeah.
The demonstrations are a drag. Besides,
I'm much too high. Yeah, right, exactly. And it really wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends. Right.
Right.
Yeah, that may be on this computer. If it is, I'll play that. But, yeah, I thought he was great, but, right, it was very sad. Took his own life. And but Michael's still with us, and you can look up the Michael Oakes Gallery. I mean, it's basically everybody.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so...
All right.
All right, well, great to hear from you. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Bye.
All right, so... now I don't know. See, I just don't know whether or not I took the break this portion or not. Did not. So I'll say goodbye now, and we'll pick it up right after the news right here on WGN Radio.
Oh, look outside the window. There's a woman being grabbed. should call the cops and try to stop the pain. But Monopoly is so much fun, I'd hate to blow the game. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends. Riding down the highway, yes, my back is getting stiff. 13 cars are piled up, they're hanging on a cliff. Now maybe we should pull them back with our towing chain. But we gotta move and we might get sued, and it looks like it's gonna rain. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends. Sweating in the ghetto with the colored and the poor. The rats have joined the babies who are sleeping on the floor. Now wouldn't it be a riot if they really blew their tops? But they got too much already, and besides we've got the cops. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, 1967, how about that? Friend told me KYA played it. Did not know that, but somehow it would fit outside a small circle of friends. A&M pushed it as a single. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, and we've got Carl in Chicago. What's up, Carl?
Hey, Raleigh. How you doing? You sound good.
Thank you, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for the talk about credit cards and money earlier. It's interesting. There are some songs I was hoping you could play sometime. For the Love of Money by the OJs.
Okay.
And Money, That's What I Want by
Barrett Strong. Okay.
And Money Honey by the Drifters.
Okay.
And Money by Pink Floyd.
Okay.
And Money, Money, Money by ABBA.
I doubt we'll play ABBA, but go on.
All right.
Now,
yeah,
you're missing one of the best ones. Your cash ain't nothing but trash.
There you go. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I never got any education about money in grammar school, in high school. I went to a technical high school in college. Nothing.
Yeah.
I got the best education I ever got from a guy named Bob Brinker.
Money Talk. Absolutely. CBS.
Yeah. And I was with him since the 1980s, and he was doing fine, and all of a sudden, bang, something happened to him health-wise and stopped his newsletter and stopped his fixed income investment letter. And for the life of me, I can't find out what happened to him. He's just... bang! They returned my money from my yearly subscription. It was a monthly deal. I got a master's degree in money because of Bob Brinker over the years. Yeah.
Really, I think he's living in Henderson, Nevada now. But you know, he walked away from Money Talk, and that was like 2018. But he kept doing the newsletter, the Market Timer, and that was until last year. And then
and all of a sudden, from what I understand, he had a stroke.
Oh.
And he has a son that was also working his fixed investment letter. But the last information I got was he had a massive stroke, and I didn't hear anything about him dying or anything, but it was like out of the blue that everything was canceled, and it was that. It was over. But the interesting thing that, you know, talking about money with you, you know, Sears was a big company to invest in years ago.
All right.
And then now we have Amazon, who's the modern-day Sears. And it's interesting because when Sears came out, the one big thing that made Sears absolutely successful was the Sears catalog and the railroad.
Right.
And
you mentioned...
And as long as when the railroad came out, Sears went countrywide. And with their catalog, you could buy anything through Sears. You could buy a house, you could buy a car, you could buy everything through Sears. And then Amazon came out, the modern day Sears, and Amazon said they couldn't do anything. They couldn't do anything if it wasn't for UPS, FedEx, and the mail. It was like the modern day railroad. And now Amazon, they have their own trucks that are going around delivering stuff, but But the way Amazon has grown is unbelievable. But again, you can get anything through Amazon, absolutely anything through Amazon.
Well, here is the thing when you mentioned Sears, and this is one of the things that keeps me up nights, because obviously the Sears catalog was everything and more for so many, many years, decades, literally. Obviously, somebody at Sears understood the internet because they were the big investor in Prodigy in the 80s, that GUI-based system long before there was Windows and all that stuff. And they were heavily involved in that, actually. And then they folded their catalog. And I thought to myself, what idiot would fold that Sears catalog? It was it was perfectly poised to take that online. I will, for the life of me, never understand the decision to fold that catalog when these were people who were at least prescient enough to be aware of Prodigy. And obviously, at that point, things like CompuServe, and, you know, which was a fortune and all that. So why did they do that? And I've never gotten an answer that works for me.
Yeah, somebody dropped the ball
and I know that very often happens with major companies. It's like when Kodak turned Edna Land away with Polaroid and all that. So I know when you're fat and happy, you're not likely to do things, and we can look at Xerox and the role they should have played, and or even IBM and could have played. But the Sears thing is just beyond obvious, and it really, you know, it's like Flip Wilson used to say, the devil makes me do it. Well, hell, the devil must have made somebody do this, because nothing makes sense. But I just looked up Bob Brinker, and apparently his son, this was on July 19th, 2021, and it says, update on my dad, Bob Brinker. He had a massive stroke last night, keeping him comfy for now. There's nothing else that can be done. Thank you to everyone who sent prayers, donations, or came to see him. He really enjoyed being at the show. Now, the first thing I thought is, maybe this is a different Bob Brinker, but no, a lot of the comments were, I got to talk to him once on the radio. I followed his advice my whole life and all that. So I assume this is the same Bob Brinker. And this was 2021. So he's still alive. He's in Henderson, Nevada. So I assume that he's absolutely still with us. And family members, I guess, kept that newsletter alive until last year.
Yeah.
So,
and as far as I heard, he was playing golf and he was doing good, and all of a sudden, like I said, bang!
Right.
Everything was canceled, and they said thank you, and that was the end of it. You know. So.
Right.
Hopefully he's okay. You know, like I say,
I hope so too.
I got a master's degree in finance through him, and I'll carry it with me forever. You know, he made me a multimillionaire. So, thank you, Bob Brinker.
Absolutely. I will assume that Bob recovered well enough, because I don't think they kept the newsletter alive without him. And the fact that they folded it June of last year, he was well enough to have done it that long. So I assume he had some type of recovery to some degree, which is, of course, good. And I haven't heard about anything other than that, but I assume we're looking at the closing years, obviously.
Yeah. Well, you take care. You have a good show, and have a nice evening.
You too. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
All right, so 888-876-5593-8888-Raleigh. And let's see. We have Bruce in Racine. Hey, Bruce, what's up tonight?
Well, listening to your audience talking about Jell-O shots.
Yes.
Were you blessed at all by Steve Allen in La Mirada Boulevard when he filled that bathtub up right out there in public with Jell-O shots?
Yep.
Oh, what a great day that was. You know, I visited the room at Drake University where Steve Allen took a baby grand piano apart, put it in the room, and they tried to give him a grade for it. How about that? You're great. You're great, Rob.
Yeah, Steve used to call it crazy shots, and he'd talk about the origin.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember remember that very well. And of course, he was so talented in so many areas that I think that the fact that he wasn't focused in any one area, I think a lot of people don't realize all he had going on. But he was the original host of the Tonight Show and so much more.
Yep.
Agreed.
He was my Mr. Rogers. I grew up with Steve Allen.
Well,
now you know.
Yeah, and as you know, he hated rock and roll. But that was one feature that he would do on his show when he'd do the rock and roll lyrics, you know, so somberly and all that. I thought it was hilarious.
Well, he made Percy Dove tonsils a little lame.
Right. Yep.
All right.
Thanks for calling.
God bless you.
Thanks. Appreciate it. All right, so yeah, and Steve wrote a number of songs, too, hit songs, not only things that he did, but Pretend You Don't See Her, one of them. Anyway, we'll get to James on the South Side, and Room for You Two, and I think probably since we were talking about it and reciting it, we'll do the Draft Dodger Rag next, right here on WGN Radio.
I'm just a typical American boy from a typical American town. I believe in God and Senator Dodd and in keeping old Castro down. And when it came my time to serve, I knew better dead than red. But when I got to my old draft board, buddy, this is what I said. Sarge, I'm only 18, I got a ruptured spleen, and I always carry a purse. I got eyes like a bat, and my feet are flat, and my asthma's getting worse. Oh, think of my career, my sweetheart dear, my poor old invalid aunt. Besides, I ain't no fool, I'm a-going to school, and I'm a-working in a defense plant. I got a disc plated disc and a racked up back. I'm allergic to flowers and bugs. And when the bombshells hit, I get epileptic fits and I'm addicted to a thousand drugs. I got the weakness woes. I can't touch my toes. I can hardly reach my knees. And if the enemy came close to me, I'd probably start to sneeze. Sarge, I'm only 18. I got a ruptured spleen and I always carry a purse. I got eyes like a bat and my feet are flat and my asthma's getting worse. Oh, think of my career, my sweetheart dear, and my poor old invalid aunt. Besides, I ain't no fool. I'm a-going to school and I'm a-working in a defense plant. I hate Chow and lie, and I hope he dies. But I think you gotta see that
someone's gotta go over there, and there's someone in me. WGN Radio, I'm Riley James. That's the Pete Seeger version, because that's the one that came out on 45. Columbia released that in 66. It originally had been on a Phil Oakes album, I Ain't March Anymore, something like that, that he released in 65. But a year later, it was John Hammond, who did so much of the folk stuff on Columbia, who was producing Pete Seeger, and they put that out as a 45. And the flip was Guantanamera, of all things. But yeah, I thought it was, as far as I'm concerned, the definitive version of the Draft Dodger Rag. All right, so, and that's a case, you know, you don't have to agree with the sentiments whatsoever, but you got to like a clever lyric, at least I do. 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh and Sherry is in Naperville. What's up tonight, Sherry?
Hi, Raleigh. I wanted to know, I got my pen outside and red in my hand, what was the name of that song, something with Cadillac?
I need more than that.
Oh, it's like an hour ago you played it.
Oh, I know. William DeVaughn. Be thankful for what you got.
Oh, be thankful for what
you got. Yeah, Sunrooftop, digging the scene with the gangsta lean. Yeah, that's William DeVaughn. And that was a hit in 1974. On Roxbury.
Oh, what you got.
Yeah. So, that was a big hit.
And what was the artist's name?
William DeVaughn. DeVaughn. And, yeah, though you may not drive a big Cadillac, gangsta white walls, TV antennas in the back. You may not have a car at all, but remember, brothers and sisters.
I asked because I remember my stepdad, who was a big influence in our lives, and before he died. And that was a thing, and he would do the, I don't know what you call it, but the fingers, like the rolling fingers, when he danced to it.
And Diamond in the Back, Sun Rooftop, digging the scene with the gasoline. Yep.
And also that Sears catalog you were discussing.
Yep.
Why they discontinued it.
Yep.
I can tell you, because I called you originally for Sears, I think. You said, what do you know? But when I worked at Metromail, we were in Lombard. It was the IRS sanctioned printer and mail out for IRS stuff. And the other thing we did was Sears catalogs. And the prices for mail like doubled.
No, I understand. I understand that aspect of it. But what I'm saying is when they folded it, this was a time when they easily could have started investing online, which they did with Prodigy.
Well, not really. They weren't really up to speed.
Okay, we're talking the catalog was disbanded in 93. They invested in Prodigy in 87. So that's 6 years. And, of course, Prodigy was not necessarily the best thing. But by 93, you saw what was coming with the World Wide Web. Somebody there just blew it in ways that I'll never understand.
It's that guy I told you who wanted to run it and own it because that was his childhood dream, and he fucked it up.
So to speak. Hopefully Bob caught that. All right. Because we can't say that on the radio.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Yeah.
So,
but he was very, he had a goal to be the owner of Sears because he remembered it and it was a part of his life.
Yeah.
But he had no, and I'll think of his name maybe tomorrow, he had no clue business-wise.
Yeah, well, somebody really had no clue because if they were willing to spend that kind of money to invest in Prodigy, it makes no sense. Somebody had enough thinking to see, hey, wait a minute, this online thing's going to be something. How they didn't transform that catalog to online, again, it'll go down as the biggest blunder for, you know, again, if they never invested in Prodigy and they never believed in the internet, I would just say, well, they were too fat and happy and they weren't aware of what was coming. These people were aware of what was coming and they did it. So
I will say this. The Christmas catalog, which is big for kids every year, and they mailed it to every household in the U.S., they deleted that way before they deleted the main catalog.
Right, but they still had that main catalog going for, you know, like I say, 6 years after they invested
in it. Yeah, but it really didn't have the Christmas kids where they like to circle things and give it to their grandparents. Right. So actually, the grandparents would ask for them to look through the catalog and circle it.
Well, again, been the perfect move, and I'll never get it. But and no one has ever given
mismanagement and
absolutely
kind of stuff.
Missed everything. The show is over. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's good. Apologies to James, everybody else. We'll do it again tomorrow night after the game. Until then, that's a wrap. We thank Bob. We thank John. Most of all, I thank you. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.